Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Well, for so many of us, middle age is a time of transitions, some positive, others not so welcome. But when it comes right down to it, in the end, whether a change in circumstances winds up positive or negative will be determined primarily by what's in your mind and how you react to the change. And we'll begin the program today with a transition especially common this time of year. Did your youngest child only recently leave home to attend college, join the military, or move into his or her own apartment across town, or perhaps across the country? Leaving home for the first time can be an exciting adventure for your recent high school graduate. But if it's your youngest or only child who's leaving, it also can be very disorienting, sad, and even traumatic for us as parents. After all, for the past 18 years, longer if you have more than one child, a primary focus of your life has been raising offspring. And millions of parents are just now getting used to a childless lifestyle this fall. Some are dealing with it far better than others. How about you? And if not this year, your youngest departure will occur in a very few years, so it's best to begin preparing yourself mentally now. And believe me, the transition from active parent to empty nester can be viewed either as a blessing or a curse. It all depends upon attitude, goals, and ambitions for the years going forward. And my first guest today, transition expert Brenda Reynolds, is here to share with us ways that you can embrace an empty nest. She's also here to help us embrace change in general, to joyfully move forward in our lives, rather than foolishly mourn or cling on to a past that no longer exists. And Brenda Reynolds is an organizational development expert, founder of BKR Consulting, which specializes in transforming complex situations that require compassionate, imaginative, and results-oriented intervention. And as an independent consultant since 1993, she held prior leadership roles inside large organizations, and she's author of the soon-to-be-released book with a great title, TBD, To Be Determined, How to Find Clarity and Competence in Uncertain Times. Certainly an appropriate title for the times we're living in. And hello, Brenda, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Hello, Roy. How are you today?
Very well, thanks. Well, let's begin with a rediscovery of old passions. Can you offer suggestions on how we as empty nesters, probably in our late 40s or 50s, maybe in our early 60s, can rediscover passions which may have been dormant for 20 or 30 years? And how would we begin our journey of discovery?
Well, I think part of the transition is just realizing that so much of our time and energy has been focused elsewhere,
yeah,
in the best, most loving way.
Yeah.
And when we hit this transition, we are left to ask ourselves, now what? I sometimes say I'm the now what consultant. It's when people are turning and saying, now what, that they,
yeah,
they contact me.
Yeah, and hopefully people are smart enough to say that, because so many times, you know, when transition occurs, they just are kind of lost and they don't even ask that question.
Well, you know, I think that you spoke about this beautifully in the opening. It's a real opportunity to, it depends on how we look at it. And
yeah,
for myself, I've got, you know, my one son, I have two sons. One of them is getting ready to head to college in less than a year, and that will make the nest completely empty again.
Oh.
And, for me, I've been using this time leading up to it to start asking myself, now what?
Very
what are
wise.
My interests? What do I want to start bringing into my life? I'm getting more and more time, even as they're juniors and seniors in high school, you start getting more time back in your life, so it's a great time to sort of ease into that transition to determine where your interests and passions lie.
Yeah, that's very true. Well, even when our youngest moves out, most of us want to stay in touch and provide guidance for our young adult offspring. But as an empty nester, how best can we remain a part of our children's lives at college or away from home without forcing ourselves on them? And they may not want to hear from mom and dad that much.
That is the truth. And I think perhaps some of us have been broken in a little bit already with technology, because I have found they really don't even want us calling them when they are living at home. So text messaging has become the norm. I think the guidance I would offer is, as difficult as it is, when they make that transition, and everyone says it's one of the biggest, most challenging transitions we make in our lives, because as young people, everything about their life is different from the time they get to college. No one is giving them a schedule, telling them what to do and when to do it, looking over them. They're managing money. They're making a lot of independent decisions. And so they really should be communicating with us on their terms, too.
Yeah. Well, that's true, make it clear to them that they can come to us if they do have a need or a question, even though they probably would slough that off when you suggest it, but maybe once they get to college, they may wish that mom or dad were around sometimes.
And I think the way they communicate with us around their needs or even how things are going really needs to be on their terms. There may be a reason they aren't calling. Maybe they need that emotional space for their own transition and separation, or they're waiting until they have privacy. But texting them, you know, making it short and to the point is less intrusive, and it doesn't overdo it. I think that's the way I tend to interact with my older kids.
Yeah, that's probably true. Do you text them when they're in the bedroom right upstairs? Or?
Oh, there are times I don't dare go to the man cave in the basement. I just text, absolutely. I'm more likely to get a response than if I shout down the stairs.
Yeah, I never thought of that, but that would be possible in today's times. But well, from your experience as a transition expert, how long should it take to embrace an empty nest, or for that matter, any significant life changes? Is there any kind of a timetable on that, or what's the general experience in that, how long it would take to adjust?
I think it's really different for everyone, Roy. I think that what we are dealing with is two things. The change is the physical change, you know, that child of ours is going off to school or off in their own direction.
Yeah.
What we're really struggling with is what they call the transition, and the transition is the psychological, emotional part of it.
Yes.
And it's really up to us. When we're in that in-between, life isn't the way it used to be, and it isn't quite the way it's going to be yet. You're in that in-between space.
Yeah.
That's the space that feels uncomfortable, and we want to rush through it.
And yet you have the rest of your life to make that transition, so it's not like you have a that timetable that you have to be, well, I will be transitioned by December 1st or whatever.
We really don't even want to rush through it, because that's a space where we really have opportunities for getting creative, looking at potential, what do we want to do now. It really can serve a purpose, as difficult as it may feel.
And there
are some folks who, with any major life change, I was just talking with somebody about this recently, a woman who went through a divorce 25 years ago, and she still has her email address is divorced at and her age when she got divorced. So we can get stuck in that space, which is not ideal, but we also don't want to be rushing through it so quickly that we lose the opportunity in front of us either.
No, I certainly wouldn't want to spend the rest of my life as divorced at 28 or whatever.
I know. It's amazing, but it's really up to us how we do move through it. The good news is there are a lot of people around us who chances are going through the same experience. So I find that's a really nice thing, is to really reach out and spend time with other people who've been through it or are going through it at the same time.
And that's such a crucial way that you can develop new interests and new relationships by reaching out. I think the toughest thing when you're transitioning to an empty nester, whether you're a single parent or it's just the two of you, if you just concentrate on yourselves and don't reach out to others and get interested in other things that are going on, you're not going to enjoy or get through that transition near as easy. There's a world of opportunity since you no longer have to be full-time parents that you can reach out to if you just reach out and make those connections.
Let me share a funny realization I had when I launched my first son, and I share this for those who are going through this and really mourning that loss.
Yeah.
What you find out eventually is by the time they come home in the summer,
yeah,
you start counting down to when they're going back because they rock your world and you've just gotten used to things being a certain way. So I try to remember that the first year may feel so sad, but in short order, you will be fine with this transition because it does change the dynamics in your family when they come back home.
Yes, it does. That's a very good point. Well, let's go back a few years and talk about other common midlife transitions. How best can we as parents handle puberty around age 13 when a once cuddly son and daughter that had all kinds of respect for us suddenly lose all respect for our parental authority, demand full self-determination, and know it all, and most don't even want to talk to us about what's going on? How do you handle that transition?
With a question like that, you have a lot of faith in what I know, don't you?
Well, we all know.
We all know. I have found that giving them the space, because they come back around.
Oh, I see.
And it's been my experience and the experience of my friends that it's usually by the time they become sophomores in college, if they're college bound or they hit that age range, where they start to figure out that mom and dad actually may have known something.
Yeah, that's probably about right.
They really do double back, but I think it's hard to always please them, and they're very unpredictable at that earlier age. I'm living with it right now. One day I am just his most favorite person in the world, and another day it's like I don't exist. So.
Yeah, I think it is important, obviously, that we have some strict, no-nonsense guidelines to absolutely ensure safety of our own teens and others. And obviously, we have to be ready to firmly say no and apply consequences when a line is crossed. But and I think it's perfectly all right to have some family customs that are maintained, like dinner together every night with no cell phones, no TV, or no other distractions. But of course, then the parents have to abide by those rules also, so that when it's inconvenient for them to be at dinner, they have to get there also.
Well, and I think even to have that boundary around what respect should look like. You know, they may not adore you at this age every day, but there are boundaries around respect. And
we don't really want them to adore us every day at that age.
No.
And certainly never buy their affection by getting a new car or whatever. just to try to buy their love and respect, because I just don't think that works too well.
Well, whenever my guys have been displeased with some parental move I've made, my reply has always been, that's good. That means I'm doing my job.
Oh, that's great. I think everyone listening should remember that if they're having trouble with their teenagers. I love that remark.
My job is not to be popular all the time.
Well, let's turn to career. For most of us who work for someone else, at some point a boss will reform us or it'll become apparent in some other way that we've received our last promotion. We aren't going any higher and our career has plateaued. And throughout our career up to now, we've anticipated and strived for that next promotion. You basically like your employer and you don't want to quit because you have too much buildup. But how do you remain enthusiastic and committed to your job once you're basically passed over for any further promotions? Any suggestions on that?
I'm a firm believer that there is a lot of growth that can still happen in place. It doesn't need to be the result of a new title or pay increase or a career move on the career ladder. I once had a woman working for me, and when I came in as her manager, and she was really someone I thought was a star, she said, "Whatever you do, do not change anything about my job." And I thought, wow, what a shame. She's got so much potential. So I never told her I was going to change her job, but little by little gave her more and more responsibility or special projects I engaged her in. And from year one to year five, she really wasn't remotely doing the same job. Her title was the same.
Yeah.
She wasn't doing the same job. So if we apply that philosophy to your question, I think we are the keepers of our own development in many ways. So having really good conversations with the people we're working for and putting out there what we need to keep ourselves motivated and excited, as well as where we can make continued contributions, doesn't have to be about climbing the ladder anymore.
No, and too many people wrap up their entire self-esteem and existence on what their title is, which is so foolish also. You know, and one, the other side of it is all the pressure's off. You're no longer having to play politics to get promoted. So pitch in as a team player and keep that open mind and, you know, ask for job enhancements and things that you, you know, you certainly have some control over how you organize your work day and hopefully communicate with your boss so that, and also you can get involved in community activities and, you know, more time with the family and other things if you're not just scrambling to get the next promotion.
Right. You can look at the benefits of it, right. Be less stressful in some ways.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your book that's coming up in January, and I love that title. How did you come up with that title, TBD, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, it was fascinating. I was determined to find a title for the book I was writing, and I mean I got determined. I was waking up in the middle of night, writing things down and talking to people and Googling and just going on a frenzied search for that title with no luck. And then I went to a meeting with a group of 30 or 40 folks who came together from across the world in Philadelphia on a completely different topic. We had to stand in front of the room and talk about what was going on in our work.
Oh.
And I just drew a picture of a book on a flip chart that I needed to do and said, "This is my, I have this book coming out. Here's what it's about. I have no idea what to call it." So in the meantime, all I have put up here as a place marker is TBD. It's to be determined. And in unison, every person in that room yelled, "That's your title."
Yeah, that's great.
And it occurred to me later, it really made sense because when we're going through changes and transitions, we do have to call on some determination.
Yeah.
Even more importantly, though, we have to figure out how to be during those times, because one transition may end and we're going to simply have another one facing us until the end of our days.
Yeah.
So the TBD really took on some additional significance for me.
Yeah, I love that. When you think about it, it's if you look on change TBD, so that it's up to you really. You know, there's certain circumstances change, and we can't impact that all the time. But the ultimate outcome always should be a TBD, determined on what we put into it and what we really want it to be. And it's so great not to have, well, I'm locked in to be like divorcee the rest of my life as an example, or whatever the change might be. But I love that title when it comes right down to it. But what makes embracing change so challenging for most of us? Any suggestions on how we can overcome the challenge and willingly seek out positive change?
What really, I think, really gets us is that most changes are viewed initially from the standpoint of a loss, something we're giving up, we're grieving.
That's so true.
That's really what, you know, we want to think that a change starts with a new beginning, which, like, yay, we're moving to a bigger, nicer house, and we want to tell everybody and tell our kids about the new house. But the kid's first reaction is going to be, well, wait a minute, what about my friends and my school and my neighborhood? The first thing we think about is the loss of it. So,
yeah, that's so
we need
true.
To first be kind to ourselves and know that that's going to happen, so we give ourselves a chance to grieve.
Yeah.
And then after that, I wrote a whole chapter in the book about this. I think it's really about not expecting yourself to be able to see too far forward in any change or uncertain time, but to turn your low beams on. You know, when you're driving on a foggy day, you have to put those low beams on where it obscures your view. You put the low beams on and say, okay, what are the next few things I need to do or handle or take care of, and kind of inch our way through that transition fog until we eventually find ourselves on the other end kind of marveling that we got there.
Yeah, I think it's great to have a positive mental attitude of what it's going to be like and how wonderful your life's going to be when you visualize the results, but you don't have to have all the specifics in mind. Like you say, concentrate on one step at a time with that overall vision of a lifestyle on your terms at the end. I think that combination of things might be perfect.
Because, you know, you take a few steps and then you get more information. You get more data to inform what your next steps are. You always can't see the whole way to the end and how you're going to get there.
Yeah, and it's so important when you're implementing any kind of a change in life that you constantly take that feedback and alter rather than sticking to it's going to be this way or nothing. And then when it doesn't work out exactly as you planned, to say, well, I failed. I didn't change to what I wanted to. And yet you missed all these little improvements that took place all along that were leading to a better place. So it's so important that you constantly modify and take that feedback. Well, why is it especially important for us to embrace change at middle age?
Well, because it's been my experience that middle age is nothing but one change after the next.
That's what I was going to say. You embrace change at middle age because inevitably it's going to occur.
It is inevitable. You know, we're raising our children. Yeah. We're growing in our marriages, or in some cases leaving marriages, remarrying, progressing in our careers, making job decisions. You know, our bodies are changing.
Yeah.
It's pretty remarkable when you think about it, but it's a perfect time of year to be reminded that through those changes, things drop to the ground in the fall, and they create nice, fertile ground for what's coming next. And doesn't always feel exciting, but I think if we're going to live to be a nice, ripe old age, we'd better get pretty accustomed to change.
And we better enjoy, if we're going to live to a ripe old age, let's enjoy living to it rather than suffer along.
Yes.
Unproductive and boring life, because that's not really worthwhile either. Well, what prompted you to write your book and focus on this topic in your work?
Really, because I have spent most of my career helping people, like I said, when they have issues, the complexity of usually it's because of a change or a transition, and they're saying, now what? That's when I get called in. So,
I see.
At the same time, I was going through my own life transitions, and I realized a lot of the concepts I used in the business world were the same ones that I was applying in my personal life, and I was taking a lot of my personal life learnings and sharing those in my business work. And that's when I thought, you know, there really is a universal set of principles here that I think could help people, whether it's in their personal transitions or their work transitions.
I see. Well, when will your book be available to preview and purchase, and where should we go to find it? I guess it's not ready quite yet.
Not ready quite yet. January in 2017 is when it should be available. And you can always be checking my website, which is bkrconsult.com to get the latest information on that.
And by the way, on your website, I found a really outstanding blog comparing braces and change in life, and I urge everyone to read that because I thought it was really fascinating, and there are a lot of parallels.
I didn't think I had enough change in my life, so I decided to get Invisalign braces as an adult. So yes, you can certainly see how I've made those comparisons and get a sample of my writing style.
Yeah, no, it's really a good blog, and I would recommend you go to the blog section on the BKRconsult.com. And in conclusion, whether it be an empty nest, suddenly sullen teenagers, job loss, career dead end, pending retirement, divorce or separation, maybe even the tragic loss of a loved one before his or her time, one thing's for sure, at middle age, change is coming. Now, next week, next month, next year, who knows when. But let's look at it from another angle. Perhaps your life today is stuck on neutral, lost dreams and diminished expectations, as we often call it, and you desperately want to and need to make some changes. And whether you yourself initiate change or external circumstances force changes upon you, you and you alone will determine how you react to change and whether in the long run that change will be positive or negative for you. In the end, no one finds lasting joy continually stuck on neutral. And as my guest today, Brenda Reynolds, advises in her forthcoming book and in her consulting, embrace the changes in front of you and do so inside first with uniformly positive expectations. And you don't need to change everything all at once. Take it one day at a time. And everyone doesn't have to notice on day one. As Brenda puts it in her blog, get on the path to invisible realignment. And thanks a million, Brenda Reynolds, for joining
us. Thank you very much.
And best of success in your forthcoming book. We'll all look for it come around January of 2017.
That's TBD, correct.
Yes, ma'am. Well, and once it comes out, maybe we can have you back to discuss more about the book.
That would be my pleasure, Roy. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, ma'am.
Uh-huh.
Well, our guest, Brenda Reynolds, has given us a very inspirational message on surviving and thriving at middle age, including surviving the empty nest syndrome. But here's one question for you before I go today. Are you prepared in your mind and spirit to launch the new, improved version of you? And I'm not talking here about some total stranger. Rather, I merely suggest you combine a youthful zest for living. Remember how you had in your early 20s? A zest for living, a positive outlook on the future. Combine that with a mature judgment you have gained through 20-plus years of adult living. And that's a surefire winning combination. And who says you can't be positive at life just because you're 45 or 50? There's no one that says you can't. To begin, I encourage you to make yourself four solemn promises. Promise number one, no longer will I dwell upon past mistakes. You know, there's nothing more foolish than to keep regretting something that you did in the past that you can't change. You can use it as a roadmap on what to avoid in the future, but whatever you do, don't dwell and fret over something you did in the past. Promise number two, I hereby appoint myself as CEO of me. Who else is more qualified for that job? Ask yourself that. And who has who's more likely to have your interest in mind than you yourself? So make that your second promise. Third, moving forward, I will seek out and concentrate upon positive aspects of today, of my circumstances, of my outlook on life, and I will spread goodwill to everyone around me. You know, you can either be an energy drainer or an energy supplier, and it's so much more positive to be a supplier and to not only motivate yourself, but everyone around you. So that would be the third promise. And the fourth promise, starting now, I ban all worry and negative thinking for 23 hours a day. Yeah, we'll leave 1 hour open, one remaining hour for you to worry. But the only kind of worry you should worry over is over constructive matters over which you have at least partial control. And that means no sitting around and worrying about the election. or anything like that, or what might happen that you have no control over, because that's a totally time waster, and it just gets you all upset over nothing. And your next step is to fill in the void left by discarded negative thoughts, those 23 hours you've got the worrying out of, and replace that with heartfelt messages and images of a positive, goal-oriented future precisely on your own terms. You may not have the full definition of what that future is going to be, and that's what you're going to be working on for the 23 hours that left. And absolutely refuse to sell yourself short. Positive visualization is a wonderful tool. I'm sure you've heard about it in this program and read about it. If you genuinely believe in your heart and soul that life's second half will be joyful and productive, it will. You may not know exactly how it's going to work out, but you do and can know that you will have a positive time of it. You know, no one can force you to regret the past or to dread today and tomorrow. You may not be able to fully determine the future, but you and I can condition our minds and emotions to anticipate and make the best of it, whatever occurs. And we're here to help you recapture the blessings of middle age. And if you would like to arrange a free 30-minute trial coaching session in which we get to know each other, you get to know me and I get to know you, and we can discuss some preliminary ideas on how you can renew your life, you can reach me at 515-221-9902. That's 221-9902. Or you can email me at roy@middleagerenewal.com. And just say you would like to arrange a half-hour free coaching session with me. Give me some times that you might be available, and we'll arrange something. I'd love to talk to you. And don't forget to preview my book while you're at it on my website, A Middle Age Challenge, Wake Up, by Roy C. Richards. You can find that on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, and also on our website, middleagerenewal.com. That's A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, by Roy C. Richards. And that's our program for today. Tune in next week when we'll talk about the very troubling but also at times very inspirational subject, battling back from cancer, yours or that of a loved one. And we'll talk to you next week on Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.